Aquito, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I please report, counsel? Your Honor, the district court, in granting the defendant's motion for summary judgment, erred in finding that the defendants were not subjectively aware of a significant imminent threat to the safety of Brian Case. The district court did find that each of the defendants was aware of the fact that inmate Philip Jones had repeatedly threatened to attack Brian Case once Brian Case was released from segregation status, which he was placed while in the special management unit of the facility. But despite this, the district court said that even though they're aware of these threats, they weren't aware of the fact that Philip Jones posed a significant imminent threat to Brian Case's safety. Now, in drawing this conclusion, the district court overlooked material facts and drew inferences in the light most favorable to the defendants. Specifically, the court overlooked or ignored the substantial amount of evidence showing that each of the defendants were warned by multiple sources of the fact that Philip Jones was going to attack Brian Case. For example, in regards to Warden Aquito, the evidence shows that Warden Aquito had been informed by Brian Case that Philip Jones was going to attack him. He had also been informed by another inmate by the name of Ronzel Larimore that Philip Jones was going to attack Brian Case. More significantly, the prison psychiatrist, Dr. Iwashita, had given Philip Jones the pending designation of predator and Brian Case the designation of vulnerable victim. Now, Dr. Iwashita testified in his deposition that the reason for these classifications was to put the prison staff on notice of the fact that Philip Jones posed a threat to Brian Case. Dr. Iwashita testified that not only that he would have discussed these classifications with the ranking officials at the prison, as well as the staff and members and the individuals responsible for Brian Case's safety. Now, in regards to Assistant Warden Boyd, the evidence shows that both Brian Case and an inmate by the name of Jason Chester both wrote to Assistant Warden Boyd saying, Philip Jones is going to attack Brian Case as soon as he gets out of segregation. In regards to Captain Smith, the evidence shows that he was notified of the threat that Philip Jones posed to Brian Case in several ways. Dr. Iwashita testified that he would have discussed the issue of Brian Case's safety with Captain Smith. And furthermore, there's evidence showing that Ronzel Larimore and Jason Chester both discussed the issue of Brian Case's safety with Captain Smith. And in fact, Jason Chester did so four different occasions. In regards to Lieutenant Jones,
had Case been asked to be placed in segregation?
Your Honor, Case did not specifically ask to be placed in segregation. He acted out in a manner that assured that he would. For example, he pardon the language, but threatened to kick a prison guard's ass, knowing that that type of threat, a threat of violence, would surely, under most circumstances, end up with him being in segregation.
Couldn't he just request segregation for self-protection?
I suppose he could have requested. He certainly acted in a manner that was tantamount to a request. In fact, the evidence shows that he had been placed in segregation and he was expecting to stay in segregation until he was removed from segregation at the behest of Warden Aquito, who directed Captain Smith to take him out of segregation 3 days before the attack. If he had been left in segregation, the attack couldn't have taken place. Again, each of the defendants was given ample notice from multiple sources that Philip Jones was going to attack Brian Case. And in regards to the individual correctional officers, Troyer, Goforth, Donaldson, and Wilcoxon, the evidence shows that Troyer and Wilcoxon were personally present and heard Philip Jones tell Brian Case, as soon as you get out of segregation, I'm going to get you. Now, Your Honors, in saying that the defendants had no subjective awareness that Philip Jones posed an imminent and significant threat to Brian Case's safety, the district court overlooked all of these facts. Moreover, they also overlooked the fact that it was well known that Philip Jones was an inmate with a propensity for violence. His prison record showed that he attacked at least 6 other inmates. He had even taken a prison guard hostage in order to get a transfer. Dr. Iwashita testified, in fact, that everyone was afraid of Philip Jones. Philip Jones presented himself as a man who would carry out this type of a threat, and yet the defendants ignored it. Therefore, we believe that the district court overlooked these facts and erred in finding that the defendants lacked subjective awareness.
Mr. Wilson, what evidence, if any, do you have of the complicity of any of the defendants in the attack? Did they might have affirmatively aided and abetted?
Well, for example, Your Honor, there's a couple of different things that point to this. First, Brian Case was in segregation. When he was in segregation, he was not allowed out of his cell unless he had a prison guard with him. He was taken out of segregation earlier than was expected when put in the labor pool. When in the labor pool, he was not going to have this guard escorting him everywhere he went. This made him more vulnerable to attack. Secondly, the defendants testified that the print room, which is the place from where Philip Jones launched his surprise attack, was under the control of the defendant. Captain Smith testified that if any prisoner wanted access to the print shop, he had to get it had to be authorized by Captain Smith to have that access. So a reasonable inference can be made that one of the defendants let Philip Jones into the print shop, let him there without supervision, knowing that Philip Jones is going to attack or state intent. And finally, Your Honor, there's the evidence regarding the weapon used by Philip Jones. Philip Jones beat Brian Case with the broom. The policy of the SMU unit was that this broom was to be locked up in a closet when not in use. The very reason for that policy is so it cannot be used as a weapon. Yet, Philip Jones was given unauthorized access to the print shop, or given access to the print shop where this potential weapon was made available to him.
What about this remark of Captain Smith's saying that he would not be able to cover for Jones if Jones went ahead and did something to him?
Well, yes, Your Honor. That certainly is evidence that prior to the attack, when Captain Smith was overheard talking to Philip Jones saying, if you do this, I can't cover for you. There's evidence showing that Captain Smith favored Jones over Brian Case. He considered Case to be, again, pardon my language, but he testified a pain in the ass. This evidence shows that Captain Smith, at least, was aware of what could potentially happen and ignored the risk. Again, evidence of deliberate indifference on the part of the defendants can be shown not only from the fact that the evidence showing that they may have helped instigate or allow the attack to occur, but they had so many options to prevent this attack.
I think your major task is to show us that this is not simply negligence or even gross negligence, a bunch of not too swift prison authorities, but is in fact the kind of willful and wanton behavior that that makes for an Eighth Amendment violation.
Yes.
How can you help us over that hurdle?
Again, Your Honor, I believe that the evidence shows that the defendants had all this information showing an attack is bound to happen. Instead of taking preventative measures to keep the attack from occurring, they undertook a course of action which actually helped facilitate the attack. Instead of placing Case or Jones or both of them in segregation, they removed Case from segregation and put him in a situation where he had less protection and the attack was more easily carried out. I believe that's how you find that.
Was the danger to Case that he'd be assaulted? I mean, that he would be beaten or that he'd be raped?
Philip Jones, again, most of his assaults on other inmates had been sexual assaults. But again, Your Honor, I think that's almost splitting too fine a hairs in some ways that rape is a crime of violence. Either way, Philip Jones is trying to assert domination, and in fact, the reason that he was after Case is he made sexual advances on Brian Case, and those were rebuffed. We believe for these, the evidence does show that the court erred in granting summary judgment for the defendant, and we would ask that decision be reversed.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Hutchett?
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Assistant Attorney General Richard Huzzack, counsel for the defendants, and I urge the court to affirm the district court's entry of summary judgment in favor of the defendants on Mr. Case's Eighth Amendment claim, because with the benefit of hindsight, the most that can be said is that the defendants were perhaps negligent in not preventing this attack, not that they were guilty of inflicting cruel and unusual punishment, satisfying the objective and subjective elements of a failure to protect claim.
I gather that your colleague's claim, though, is that there is a sequence of events here that could not have happened without the knowledge and indeed the complicity of the guards at this facility. The attacker was able to position himself in an area of unsupervised, where he was unsupervised, where he would in fact have an opportunity to encounter the victim, and where he would have somebody gave him access to a weapon, because those brooms were not usually available to prisoners. And then we have the comment of the captain to the perpetrator, "Hey, if you go ahead with this, I don't think I can cover for you." Now, why doesn't that make for a jury question as to whether or not there was something a little bit more than negligence going on here? There was also motivation, because this victim was about to testify against their brother guards in another matter.
Well, I think if you analyze those facts most carefully, what you find is that they really amount to nothing more than conjecture and speculation, that Captain Smith was somehow in cahoots in a conspiracy to try and arrange for an attack upon...
Well, sir, you know, our reported cases have instances of that happening in Illinois prisons. I mean, this is so it's... You know, this does happen.
Well, certainly, I'm not suggesting that there's some, you know, per se legal rule...
Well, what's your interpretation of Smith's comment?
Well, it came from another inmate who, after 2 years after the event,
that's
claims
true, but
that
it's an admission, it's admissible evidence.
I'm going to take the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, but I think what it suggests is that we have to assume that there was animosity between Smith and Case, but animosity attached to...
I don't understand you. These words I can't cover for. What does this mean? What is your interpretation of those words?
Looking at the affidavit itself, it suggests that there was some rumor afoot that Smith was on notice that Jones had some type of sexual interest in Case, which is what most of the reports about the threats are related to. And Smith's reaction was essentially, "Listen, you know, if something like this happens, you know, I can't, I'm not going to be able to
Pretty extraordinary thing to say to a prisoner, I must say.
Yeah, there's no way you can put a positive spin on that.
No, comment. No, and I think my response is that the plaintiff had to present evidence in support of all the elements of the claim. One of those is that the circumstances rose to the level of a serious risk of substantial harm. The rape allegations go, or the allegations of rape threats go nowhere, because in fact in this situation there wasn't any possibility of a rape.
Jones, I don't understand how Jones could have been allowed to roam around the prison like this, but in any event, there are these known threats by Jones. He's completely out of control, and Case is identified as his victim. So they allow Jones to roam around and be in a place where he can jump Case.
Completely
reckless to me. There's one thing I don't believe in your brief at all, that there's never been a fight in this prison. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
No, what the record...
These are people in this prison because they can't be handled anywhere else, apparently. That's what you say.
Well, the special management unit is for prisoners who can't be protected, often because they have enemies in the prison system.
Right, and you're saying that there's never a fight in a prison of that sort between inmates?
What I asserted is that the plaintiff has adduced no evidence that any of the defendants was ever aware of any fight in the special management unit.
I cannot believe that. The defendants are the guards, and you're saying they've never heard of a fight in the prison?
It's unrefuted, unrebutted testimony.
Well, I just don't believe it. How many inmates are there in this prison?
That's not a matter that I'm aware of being in the record.
Ten?
No, I think the evidence shows that there's a substantially larger number than that in the prison. The special manager.
There's never been a fight between two of them. Even though these people are so incorrigible, they're put in this special prison because they have so many enemies. Their enemies are in the same prison, like Jones and Case.
Who were kept in separate
prisons? No, they weren't kept separate. Obviously, they weren't kept separate. They intersect, right? They intersect when Case is going past
the
print shop.
Well, in a surprise attack that's unprecedented in its nature.
The print shop is where Jones is assigned.
Yes, and it happens to
so
be...
So there it happens. They happen to intersect.
And that may be evidence of negligence, but it doesn't rise to the level of criminal
Smith's
recklessness.
Statement. It's Smith's statement that helps to promote this above negligence. Remember, the thing the Supreme Court keeps stressing, and we stressed before the Supreme Court, is that there's a difference between being negligent in the sense you should have known somebody was endangered and being deliberately indifferent in the sense you know that someone is in danger, namely Case, you know who he's in danger from, you could very easily prevent the danger from materializing just by putting one of these two guys in segregation, and you don't do it. That sounds like deliberate indifference.
But that's an incomplete set of the facts. The additional facts are that Jones had never injured another prison, although over a dozen years in the prison system there had been instances of assault on other prisoners. And in fact, he'd been 4 years in the SMU.
That's kind of an absurd distinction. He's committed 6 assaults, but fortunately, nobody has been seriously injured, and therefore he's harmless.
Well, prisons are somewhat dangerous places, and to establish as a benchmark
no, they're not,
for the Eighth
not,
Amendment...
No, not in your view, because there's never been a fight in this prison before.
No, I keep on saying...
This is not a dangerous prison.
Your Honor, there
right?
may
this
have been...
This is a safe prison, because these inmates never fight with each other.
What I'm focusing on is the special management unit. There's no evidence that any of the defendants was aware of an attack between inmates in the special management unit.
So why do you say prisons are a dangerous place?
Because that's generally true. And
but it's
this
not
course,
true at this prison.
In the special management unit, there's always some risk
well,
of injury.
Well, it's a prison, this SMU, isn't it? No,
it is a wing in this prison.
I thought
prison.
There were 3 different wings.
It's the A wing of the...
Well, did you say there were 3 different wings? There was
yes,
the labor, there was the segregation,
so
there
were classifications
population.
within the different...
Well, I thought there were different wings, different physical...
Yes,
place.
Jones was in Wing C. Normally, he would not have had any access to.
Well,
to
is Wing C in the special management unit?
I believe it is, Your Honor. Yes.
So the special management unit is not just an office somewhere. It's got these 3 different buildings.
That's correct, and they do have some common areas. They have the dietary area, which is common, and they have the common yard. And under the arrangements in place with the different classifications and the different wings, normally there would not have been access between Wing and Case.
Jones,
thank you. The fact that the defendants did not prevent an attack, this type of, you know, sort of but-for causality, is insufficient, however, under the law to establish that there was both the objective element of a substantial risk of serious harm, and in addition, that there was a culpability rising to the level of a deliberate indifference to that risk.
Because the fact that they were housed on different wings and would normally not see an awful lot of each other kind of substantiates the case that if they did see each other, somebody expedited that or facilitated that.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree, and I submit that the fact it may have occurred is not a sufficient evidentiary basis to raise the reasonable inference that somehow Smith was in cahoots with Jones to try and arrange this or set this up. I just don't think that a jury based upon this evidence could make such a finding.
Well, but that's not the standard we're to apply. I mean, there's a material fact question here, and even though you're arguing there are other factors that the jury could weigh, I mean, there are like 8 different reasons that he was put in serious and significant harm. I mean, this is very, to me, a very different case than the normal run-of-the-mill Eighth Amendment violation that we see.
But it bereft of that allegation that Smith had made this comment, all you have is a situation in which there was a remote risk of relatively modest terms.
It wasn't remote at all, because they know that Jones is after Case, and they assigned Jones to the print shop, and he's left there unsupervised and with access to a weapon, and they know that Case is going to be periodically next to the, you know, pass by the print shop on his way to eat. So they know there's a very high risk, and they don't do anything, even though they could very easily do something.
I think, Your Honor, that does suggest that with the benefit of hindsight, like in so many situations, you say, as the defendants apparently did in this case, oh, if we had known that it was going to happen beforehand, we would have taken appropriate precautions. But that is
the threshold. That's not the legal standard. You're saying they have to know that the injury is going to occur. No, they have to know that there's a risk, as opposed to they should know. That's negligence. They should have known there was a danger. They didn't. They knew there was a danger. And that triggered a duty to do something to prevent the danger from materializing. They did nothing.
The only clarification I'd make with respect to our position, Your Honor, and I see that my time is up, is that what they had to know was that there was a substantial risk of serious harm. And I do not believe that the record supports the possibility of a finding that threshold was met. Certainly there was a possibility of injury, as evidenced by the fact that this attack did occur. But with a simple test of foreseeability under a negligence standard, that is not the requirement for liability.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hudson.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Wilson, does he have any more time? 1 minute?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just would make a few brief points in regards to inmate Jones. Again, the evidence shows that besides attacking at least six other inmates, he'd also had taken a prison guard hostage at another facility. That certainly shows if he's going to take a prison guard hostage, he's capable of violent acts. Also in regards to access to the print shop, not only was he given access to the print shop, it was early access to the print shop. It was beyond the norm. That further shows that the defendants went out of their way, or suggests the defendants went out of their way to help facilitate this. In short, we believe that a trier of fact should be allowed to consider all the attendant facts and Captain Smith's statement to inmate Jones and decide that issue of material fact. It should not have been resolved via summary judgment. Therefore, again, we ask that the decision of the district court be reversed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you to both counsel. Next case for argument, United States versus Rochester, Mr. Beyer.